Hello, everyone, and a warm welcome to the latest episode in our series of Employment Espresso Pods. I am Tyler Hendry. I'm based in New York and a senior associate at HSF, where our ambition is to help you achieve your goals. I'm very happy to be joined today by Andrew Taggart and Christine Young, two partners in our London office. And in this podcast, we are going to be discussing employee activism, which I believe is one of the most challenging areas for employers to navigate, and candidly for me as counsel to advise on, because in this space, you're really dealing with very strong emotions, philosophies, and belief systems that are often core to an individual's sense of self, so that can really lead to some difficult conversations. And also, there are very few times when a selected path in this space that you advise on comes with zero risk at all. With that caveat, by the end of this podcast, we will have provided a framework from both the UK and US perspective for employers when considering these issues, and also providing some guidance in amending policies in the first instance to hopefully avoid and stem off these issues. What we're talking about here is really employee activism in relation to causes that are, in the grand scheme of things, unrelated to the workplace. We've got a presidential election that's going to be coming up very shortly. That's going to be a scenario where there are a lot of passions on all sides, a lot of employees who want to have their voices be heard. And then, while I can't predict exactly what it will look like in the future, based upon the social causes and sort of the news cycle evolutions and how quickly they come and go, we can assume that in the very near future, there will be other causes over the next decade or so that employers will need to address. And we're seeing more and more discipline and having to deal with these issues in the last few years. And I assume it's going to be the same going forward. So while often these incidents are going to be fact specific in terms of what actually happens, what the employee says, what the employee's job is, what we are going to try to do today is provide a framework for what to consider from both the UK and the US perspective, both in establishing policies to cover this conduct and in addressing those specific factual scenarios. So with this very lofty goal in mind, I am going to let Andrew and Christine explain that sort of high-level framework and how to consider these issues from the UK perspective.
Thanks, Tyler. As employers feel more obliged these days to express the view publicly on events that are happening, there's going to be more prospect of employees being unhappy with that view and expressing a contrary view. And that can be exhibited from informal discussions on social media, expressing negative views on the employer's position or on the employer's business, and the business decisions that they take, to the more formal action like sit-ins and protests and strikes. Internally within the workplace, employers are having to manage these tensions between competing views of groups of employees who are expressing their views at work, and the employer is somewhat getting stuck in the middle of that debate. In the UK, there's a delicate balancing act between protecting the rights of the employees to exhibit their religious or political beliefs on the one hand, but not discriminating against others on the grounds of their protective characteristics on the other. So Andrew, there's quite a lot of case law on this tricky issue. How do employers navigate that in the UK?
Thanks very much, Christine. As you say, it's a delicate balance. The legal framework in the UK relating to protected beliefs and manifesting those beliefs is within the Equality Act 2010 and the European Convention on Human Rights. In the Equality Act, religion or belief is a protected characteristic, and it gives some definitions. So religion means any religion, and a reference to religion includes a reference to no religion at all. Belief means any religious or philosophical belief. And as with the meaning of religion, references to belief include references to a lack of belief. But it can't just be any belief. The case law has developed a test. So there's a case of Granger and Nicholson, which was about support for a political party. And it developed a 5-point test, which says the belief has to be genuinely held. It has to be a real belief, not just an opinion or a viewpoint. It has to be a belief as to a weighty and substantial aspect of human life and behaviour. And it has to attain a certain level of cogency, seriousness, cohesion, and importance. And it has to be worthy of respect in a democratic society and not be incompatible with human dignity and not conflict with the fundamental rights of others. So what are some examples? Well, Scottish independence was held to be a protected belief. Dietary veganism was not. Democratic socialism, so a belief in political philosophy, that was held to be a protected belief, as are gender critical beliefs. But for soccer fans, unfortunately, support for Rangers Football Club was not held to be a protected belief. As you said, Christine, there are a few issues and balancing acts to be undertaken. For example, in the Equality Act, you've got Section 13 that says a person discriminates against another if, because of a protected characteristic, person A treats person B less favourably than person A treats or would treat others. But then how do you integrate that protection or right with the Convention of Human Rights? The two don't necessarily fit together perfectly, and some of the cases illustrate that. And I think, where do we see ourselves at the moment? Well, I think the case law shows there is a right to express a protected belief that is now recognised within the case law as well as the statute. The range of protected beliefs is getting wider, and more secular beliefs are being recognised, and this sort of thing is exactly what creates some of the issues for employers and employees that Christine and Tyler have mentioned.
Thanks, Andrew. So yes, it's a particularly tricky area. You know, it's particularly where employees hold different but still protected beliefs. So in addition to not falling foul of the protections that Andrew was talking about that are given to employees who hold a protected belief, the employer also has a duty of care to employees to ensure a safe place of work. This comes into sharp focus where you have employee activism. Does one group of employees feel frightened or worried at work because another group are manifesting their protected beliefs? The duty of care means that employers cannot simply do nothing. They often have to intervene, but need to do so in an appropriate and a proportionate way. Before I get on to the tips, Tyler, is any reflections you have on the perspective from the US side of things?
Yes, a little different. Also, soccer not protected under the U.S. law is number one. But the case law is not as well developed. We don't use words like manifestation either. But I think when we look at these cases, as is typical in the United States, first you look at the state that you're operating in, because many states have different laws when it comes to the protections related to certain political or recreational activity, for example. So in the state of New York, there is a law that protects employees who are engaging in some sort of political or recreational activity. And the question becomes, where is the line? Is a protest a recreational activity? There's cases that said that the January 6th, for example, engaging in the January 6th protest was not considered to be recreational activity, and that was not considered to be protected under New York law, so that employee was lawfully terminated, for he was actually wearing his lanyard when he went to the January 6th protest. So he was wearing his employer's lanyard, the employer terminated him for that, and the court said that is not a protected activity, either political or recreational, under New York's law. No protections there for that employee. If that employee was in Florida, they would never have had to worry about it, because no political or recreational activity, there is no statute that protects that kind of behavior under Florida law. So the first step is looking at your state law, what protections might be in place. California does protect political activity pretty broadly. So that's the first step in the United States. The second step is Title VII of the Civil Rights Act. That's a federal law. So then you look at the federal law. Certain things that are protected under that would be LGBTQ status. So if your protest, if you're engaging in behavior that is on behalf of a certain protected group, you could potentially have protections under Title VII if you are terminated for that conduct that you're engaging in, and perhaps a member of a non-protected group engages in similar conduct that isn't terminated. Often a lot of this behavior, it depends on the social issue, but some of these social issues can be entirely unlinked or untethered from religion, politics, gender, things of that nature. And the reality is, in a lot of those cases, that will not be protected behavior. And just an interesting aside is kind of preparing for this presentation. When it comes to religion and the scope of religion, Andrew, you touched on this a little bit in terms of how far religious protections go and what a belief system really means. A little bit terrifying. There was a case from about 10 years ago involving the Church of the Creator, which hopefully I assume no one really knows much about this group, but it's a group that was linked to the KKK in many ways. Under the one case analyzing whether that was a potential protected religion under Title VII, the court did say yes. So if it's linked to beliefs, that could fall under the protections of Title VII. From a practical perspective, then you have to think about, do you care when you're making the determinations based on that for the employee discipline? But it makes for an interesting analysis, and this is really an area that has not developed much by way of case law in the United States. So it'll be interesting to see as this progresses and as this becomes more of a litigated topic, how this all develops.
I think just rounding it out, just a few tips for employers in these situations. Well, the first is probably where there is a dispute between employees, try to find a compromise position if you can. Where someone has acted improperly in their manifestation of their belief, do you try to take a proportionate approach to dealing with it? Avoid the knee-jerk reaction, because that could prove costly in the long run. Be consistent in your approach across expressions of belief. So don't call out certain expressions, but not others, because that risks a discrimination claim. It also risks significant employee relations issues and further employee activism. Workplace mediation is something that may be appropriate in certain circumstances. Make sure you've got up to date policies so everyone's aware of what they should and should not be doing, and that's consistent with the protections that are currently afforded to those who have protected beliefs, so like your social media policy, for example, and ensure that there's appropriate training to staff so that they are aware of those policies. Ultimately, the best guiding principles to allow staff to exhibit their beliefs, but to caution all staff to ensure they're doing so in an appropriate way and in a respectful way of the views and feelings of others, so they don't manifest a view in an inappropriate manner that could cause upset or cause offence. And dealing with things even-handedly with staff who have contrary views to avoid any suggestion of bias. You want to be seen as that tolerant and fair employer, and to have a safe work environment.
And just to chime in briefly from the U.S. side, I think this is one conversation I've had with employers is, if you are thinking about disciplining employees or talking to employees about their own beliefs and their statements that they're being made, employers should also be careful about making public statements on these sort of controversial issues. Because I've had the situation where you have an employer that, again, wants to say that an employee has gone too far and they're talking about issues that have something to do that is entirely unrelated to the workplace. That's the employer's argument. But then you go back a year and that employer has made a public statement on that specific issue out in a public forum. So it makes it very difficult to go in and tell that employee, there's no reason for you to be talking about this as an employee because that has nothing to do with your job, that has nothing to do with the workplace. And then the employee can come back and really say, well, you were the one who spoke about this in a public forum, and that really speaks on behalf of me, and I have an issue with that. So it's just a reminder to be careful with those sort of public statements, particularly when employers feel pressured to get something out there in the early days of when they have social pressures, just to be very careful and mindful of those sort of considerations down the road, when a lot of employers then want to take the position that employees shouldn't be speaking on behalf of the employer or talking about certain issues that could be controversial.
So thank you very much for joining us on today's Expresso Pod, and look forward to you joining us again in the future. Thank you.
Thank you.